Advent is a time to reflect, pray, and worship the Christ who came, who comes, and will come again. The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for December is an Advent devotional booklet called The Jesse Tree. These short daily devotions are filled with symbols, telling the story of Jesus from creation to his second coming. The Jesse Tree is available for only $3. Learn more at issuesetc.org or by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. The Jesse Tree. For my entire adult life, and probably well before that, I had been told that the real problem with the world's population was that it was too big. It needed to get smaller. That we were overpopulated. Now, I grew up in the suburbs, and you could look right across the street and see a house full of kids, and you could look right across the side yard and see a house full of kids, and it seemed pretty closely populated to me. Then, of course, we'd take a trip out to my grandparents' house and to the farm in western Kansas, and, well, the population density didn't seem that great out there. I realized there was a lot of wide open space, at least here in the United States. Is the problem that the world's too crowded and that all these people are creating all these greenhouse gases and will, within decades, destroy life here on Earth? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to talk about environmental and population alarmism. Glenn Stanton joins us. He's Director of Family Formation Studies for Focus on the Family, author of several books, including his latest, The Myth of the Dying Church, and a recent column for Quillette titled The End of the World as We Know It. Glenn, welcome back.
It's good to be with you, Todd. Thanks.
Let's take these subjects kind of one at a time. First, the climate, and they do interact with one another, but what is climate anxiety?
Well, climate anxiety is something that medical doctors are particularly concerned about, and it's not the climate impacting people, but the anxiety that people are feeling from the news that people like AOC and others on the left say, oh, we've only got 7 years left, you know, until the Earth implodes because of global warming, or 12 years left, things like that. And the medical journal Lancet recently issued a call to action for medical professionals to try to combat and aid people who are dealing with what they call climate anxiety. I mean, kids that are just freaked out thinking, oh my goodness, we've got less than 15 years left. And so that is a real problem, the kind of environmental eco-freakout that you know, so many on the left are calling us to.
This all goes back to an individual, Thomas Malthus. There's even an entire kind of school of thought dedicated to him. Who was he, and what was his theory about the world's population and the world's environment?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you know, the Malthusian school that you referenced. I mean, he wrote a book in 1798, got to get my numbers right there, called Essays on the Principle of Population. And he said, you know, essentially, and it made sense at the time, that there are limited resources. There are, you know, so many potatoes to go around, so many chickens to go around, but population is growing exponentially, so that we have to make sure that we are only letting, if you will, the right kind of people procreate, so that we don't let the wrong kind of people procreate. Now, Malthus didn't really say that, but people came along after Malthus and said, hey, we need to, so you have Malthusian eugenics, this idea of let's have the right kind of people reproducing and let's not have the wrong people reproducing, because Malthus, and then it came later, you know, the population bomb, Paul Ehrlich in his book, you know, that, oh my goodness, we can't go beyond 5 billion, 7 billion people or people are going to start dying. Well, evidence and examples of reality in the modern world today have just absolutely proven Malthus absolutely wrong. And it's interesting that the left is very kind of flat earthers regarding Malthus, because they still think that his ideas hold sway when the modern world today proves them absolutely wrong.
We'll talk about some of that proof in a minute, but you say that Thomas Malthus viewed people as zero-sum consumers. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, he was, you know, like basically every new baby that comes along is a stomach to be filled. And then that little baby grows to be a consumer. You know, he or she needs. And we can't have a world where we're just exponentially growing consumers in that way of mouths to feed, people to care for, people to clothe. We just don't have that many natural resources. Well, I mean, here we are in 2020 and we've got, you know, like 7.7 billion people on the face of the earth, and poverty is going down. Hunger is going down. You know, those kinds of things. We produce more food than we need for all the people in the world today. We need help politically distributing it, but you know, the practical experience of what we're seeing in the world today, people are not starving by the zillions. Hunger is going down. We are doing better in these ways. And so, again, Malthus was absolutely wrong. And we'll talk later on about why this is and exactly that people aren't consumers, but they're actually problem solvers. And it's their power as problem solvers and innovators that makes more people more valuable.
Why is this environmental alarmism the cause celeb, literally the cause celeb? It is not only popular among our lawmakers who may have something to gain from this politically, but the celebrity classes almost uniformly adopt it as their cause, and then you can become a celebrity by simply adopting it as your cause, as in the case of this young Greta Thunberg. Why is it so popular with the elites?
Well, there's a lot of different reasons for that, Todd, and this is a great, great question. And part of it is the need to care, the need to be seen as caring. And like, you know, we care for the children, we care for tomorrow, we care for the future. And in order to care for the future, you know, it's not have more babies, produce more good human beings, it's produce less of them. And that's the other part of it, Todd, is that these are people who have, if you will, quote unquote, a theological worldview that do not see people as good things, as blessings, if you will. I mean, you know, from a biblical point of view, we see children as a blessing from the Lord, that children are a good thing. But it's interesting that this philosophy today says one of the worst things that you can do for the future is to have babies, is to produce new human beings. And that's what has our young people so freaked out. Even, unfortunately, many Christians, they think, well, of course we know that having more babies is not good for the earth. Well, that's not what the science actually says. And that's what my article in Quillette goes into in great detail of documenting why more babies are the ticket to a happier, safer, more productive future.
So tell us about some of this science. And these aren't fringe scientists. These are people who are looking at all of the data. They're not just focusing on, say, the temperature of around polar ice caps or something. They're looking at all of the data regarding our environment and our populations. What are they finding? Give us a few examples.
Well, Todd, that's exactly right. And I mean, what struck me and what motivated me to write this article this year, and I spent the whole summer researching it, was like all this great research coming to press by just like rock star scientists doing real scientific work. And a lot of these people, or a number of them, have published their work in a place called Our World in Data. The Oxford Martin School at the University of Oxford publishes this information. And what I wanted to do was, what do we as humans need in order to live and survive? I mean, if we're going to live 20 more years on the planet, 50 more years on the planet, we need clean air, we need clean water, we need plenty of food, and we need protection from the environment, from nature, from the elements. And I looked at each one of those, and human death rates from air pollution are declining dramatically all over the world, even as industrialization moves along, and that is because of technology. Water access to clean water is improving significantly. In fact, the people at Our World in Data at the Oxford Martin School, they explain that roughly 290,000 people gain access to improved drinking water every single day around the globe over the last 25 years. I mean, and that's only increasing of late. I mean, it's getting better. The other is the share of people undernourished or malnourished around the world is declining significantly. We are able to grow enough food to feed 10 billion people now. Our current population in the world is 7.7 or 7.8 billion, somewhere around there. So we are producing more food than we can consume. It's better, healthier food. And, Todd, it's produced on smaller tracts of land. So we are stressing the earth, if you will, less than we have 50 years ago by producing all this food. And so all of these indicators are moving in the right direction for a thriving, humane future, if you will.
Is there kind of a myopic view of history here? You point out that death from pollution, breathing polluted air, was much more common in previous generations, in less industrialized generations, and still is more common in less industrialized countries. Why is that?
Yeah, see, and this is a fascinating thing because, you know, we've seen the commercials like air pollution, and we see factories churning out pollution. But the environmentalists who study this stuff, and I mean, they tell us that pollution deaths are more than 100 times higher in non-industrialized societies because those people spend their days cooking over wood and coal-burning stoves. I mean, you think about that when you go camping, you know, in Beijing, okay, a huge city, you know, people are cooking over gas. Yes, you have factories, you have cars and things like that. But when you trade the factories and the cars, breathing that in as opposed to, you know, breathing smoke from wood-burning stoves all day long, it gets in your clothes. You can feel it. I mean, these scholars are saying that is the real threat to air pollution and that people are literally breathing easier as technology and industry grows because of things like that. So it's in the unindustrialized world that air pollution is a bigger problem than it is in the developed world. I mean, and again, it's just absolutely counterintuitive to the story that we're being told.
Glenn Stanton is our guest. He's Director of Family Formation Studies for Focus on the Family. We're talking about environmental and population alarmism. We'll discuss the demographics. Is the population, as large as it is, demographically sustainable? Stay tuned.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend, the end of our...
Thanks to our listeners, Issues Etc. has operated independently and in the black for 12 consecutive years. With 2 weeks left in 2020, we're $95,000 short of expenses. Please make a year-end tax-deductible gift to support this worldwide outreach. You can make a secure online contribution at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.
This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're devoted to our Lutheran confession and committed to strong academics. Please encourage your child, grandchild, or godchild to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR21. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Glenn Stanton is our guest. We're talking about environmental and population alarmism. So, Glenn, before we get to the demographics, I wanted you to answer one more question on kind of the environmental front, and that is we're constantly being told that the Earth is much less habitable than it ever has been before. What does the science tell us about that?
I mean, I laugh at the question, not because it's a silly question, but because the correct answer is so contrary. I mean, yes, the Earth is inhospitable to us because we're not adapting well to it and it's brutal. But no, there was excellent research published this summer by some climate scientists who are explaining to us that the number of people dying regularly from nature cataclysms, flooding, fires, earthquakes, volcanoes, I mean, across the board, that has declined dramatically. Today is the safest time to live under, you know, out of threat of nature of any time in human history. And the data trend charts on this, and I present them in my article, are just, I mean, they're downhill. I mean, they're improving, and this data is very clear that the Earth is actually getting not only just more hospitable, but dramatically more hospitable to human life, that fewer people are dying, that we're living longer lives, more productive lives, because the Earth itself is less inhospitable, if you will, to human thriving. And again, that is because humans are adapting to the world better than we ever have. And we're doing that because of science, because of technology, because of development.
Okay. You point out that those who are worried about population often focus on the raw numbers, but ignore the demographics. You just mentioned it. We're living longer. The population is also, at least in the West, radically aging. What does that paint as a near-term picture for populations?
Yeah, it was interesting, Todd, because when I first started studying this, I mean, I'm like, okay, how can we have an aging population? Well, it means that the population as a whole is growing older, of course, but it means that we're having fewer babies. I mean, so here's the numbers. The number of global citizens under 5 years old will fall by about 41% from 2017, is data that I'm working from, up until the end of this century. So the number of citizens, global citizens, under 5 years old will drop dramatically, nearly 50%. But the number of 80-year-olds between now and the end of this century will soar a whopping 414%. What that means is that we're going to have far too many old people to be able to care for. There's not enough new people coming up to pay the taxes, to be the educators, to be the caregivers, to, you know, be the inventors, to produce the resources that they need, all that kind of stuff. And it's interesting that even in June, July, this year, the Gates Foundation funded some population research. And, you know, Bill and Melinda Gates seem to be, you know, world famous for thinking, oh my goodness, we've got too many people. But their research that they funded, which was published in Lancet this summer, said, I mean, these scholars, their scholars were absolutely freaked, although they're using academic language. They don't say it quite like this, but like, oh my goodness, we have real serious problems with an increasingly aging population. They say, let me give you these numbers real quick. They say that currently there are about 7 babies born to every person that is 80 years old. And that's a pretty decent demographic kind of dividend. 7 new babies born to support every 80-year-old. These 24 Gates demographers who the Gates Foundation paid to do this research, they say, quote, in 2100, we forecasted one birth for every person turning 80 years old in the year 2100. So that is, for every 80-year-old, there is only one baby being born a year to support that person. Here's what it comes down to. You do not get to the future by those kinds of numbers. Think about your own business. You know, if your business manager said, oh my goodness, look at our customer base. We are not producing new customers for tomorrow. That's exactly what these Gates scholars are telling us here.
So it's a matter of proportion, the proportions of these various age demographics, and the fact that 80-year-olds need more care. Babies have to grow up in order to care for them, and there's a gap in the amount of time that that takes. What are they talking about in terms of a demographic winter?
Well, see, that's the very interesting thing, because we talk about, well, you know, the earth is not hospitable to life. People are living longer today than they ever have lived, not because they're stubborn, but because we have better food, because things are healthier, because things are happier, because we know how to care for life better today. And so people are sticking around longer, which is good. Us, from a Christian perspective, we celebrate the wisdom of the old, but we're simply not replacing ourselves, creating the new population that is absolutely essential to care for all these people that are continuing to live. And we have to understand that it's not a stress or a problem to create more people. Again, the Gates scholars, they say that we will never reach 10 billion people. I mean, the environmental people are like, oh my goodness, we're, you know, freaking out. The population's growing. These Gates scholars say, no, we'll probably tap out at about 9.6 billion people, and then the world population will start to decrease, negative population growth. And once it starts, it will not stop. So we need a world in order to continue human thriving and growth and productivity and health and improvement. The scholars are telling us that, yeah, we need to at least have replacement level, which is every woman of childbearing age have at least 2.1 children in their lifetime. I mean, we in all developed nations in the world are way under that, and we're simply not reproducing ourselves. And humanity does not happen, and it will not continue to happen until moms and dads get together and have these little things called babies.
And here's part of the problem, Glenn, as you well know from your research. If I want a 30-year-old 30 years from now, that baby has to be born today. And if we are not at replacement levels in the Western world, and in many other places in the world, in terms of our fertility, that generation won't be there because we did not have that generation now.
And that's exactly right. And ironically, Todd, that's exactly what these Gates scholars are saying, is the UN has known that we're not reproducing ourselves. But they go, well, you know, it's not all that bad. But this data that came forth this summer that I talk about in my article and I link to in my article, these scholars are saying, oh my goodness, it's worse than we imagined that it was. And they are pretty freaked out about it. In fact, they use the word inexorable, that we, if population trends continue, we are on an inexorable decline and erasure, if you will, of humanity itself. Because once that negative decline starts, you can't pull that airplane up once it starts that demographic nosedive. And that's what these scholars are warning us about. And that is what the science says. The science is not supporting the eco freak out. And it's science is not supporting this idea that more babies are the prescription for trouble for the future.
Okay, so finally here, it sounds like this is a problem we can't change right now because we can't have any more babies in the past. So we can't change the past demographic. And the message has been so strongly ingrained into all of us that we need to keep our families small, that abortion is a convenient solution to not wanting a family. It may be better not to have a family. Who would want to bring a child into the world? Like, this is an old adage now. That makes the problem exponentially worse, doesn't it?
Well, it does. But here's the cool thing about it, Todd, is there is time to fix it. What they're saying is if trends continue, this is what we'll be seeing. But Christians, I mean, we could start a movement to save the world literally by saying, you know what, and I love Ross Douthat has a wonderful piece in Plow magazine, you know, just the case for one more child. If families just had one additional child. And in fact, he says, I mean, I love this. He says, if women even had the babies, the number of babies they say they wish they could have because of economics and things like that, he goes, we would be in a great situation. So no, it's not too late. I mean, the future, we can change things here and we can make a difference. And it really comes together in mothers and fathers coming together and not having bunches of kids, but one more kid, you know, one additional child is the thing that could offset this end of humanity as we know it.
Glenn Stanton is director of Family Formation Studies for Focus on the Family. He's author of several books, including his latest, The Myth of the Dying Church, and a recent column for Quillette titled The End of the World as We Know It. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Glenn, thank you very much.
Hey, thank you, Todd.
LCMS Life Ministry advocates for the unborn, the weak, and vulnerable. Check out their free pro-life resources at lcms.org, lcms.org/life. In Hour 2 of Issues Etc., Joy Pullman joins us. We're going to talk about identity politics making its way through the Smithsonian. She's managing editor of The Federalist. Then it's part 8 of our series, Answering Arguments Against Christianity. Today, the Bible isn't a reliable historical document, with Dr. Adam Francisco.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
I am beautiful because I am fearfully and wonderfully made.
I am accepted because I'm a part of His family through Jesus' shed blood.
Unity Lutheran School in East St. Louis, Illinois, shines the light of Christ in one of the most impoverished cities in America. Learn how to support their mission work at unityesl.org. Unityesl.org.
Today, with the help of the Holy Spirit, I say yes to God in His ways.
The grace of God, the church's music, the Lord's Supper every service every Sunday, preaching Christ crucified and risen, our hope for years to come. There is hope in St. Louis, Hope Lutheran Church, that is. 5218 Neosho Street, St. Louis, Missouri. Find us on the web at hopelutheranstl.org.